Today we will be covering Leviticus chapters 15 and 16. Chapter 15 actually goes along with chapters 12 through 15, which cover temporary defilement, temporary uncleanness. We also covered chapters 13 and 14 the last time, which deals with infectious skin diseases, which makes a person temporarily unclean and they can't come into the tabernacle and worship. And chapter 15 is the last chapter dealing with temporary defilement, but it is actually the least defiling of all the uncleanness. And I'm going to actually move through that chapter rather quickly because I want to concentrate on chapter 16, which of course deals with the Day of Atonement. Everything in Leviticus, so far as we've been going through the book of Leviticus, culminates in chapter 16. Very important chapter. We'll talk about that as we move forward. But before we get into chapters 15 and 16, let's do a brief review from the last time, the last Bible study. Chapter 13 was concerned with infectious skin diseases, concerning a wide variety of skin diseases that can include leprosy. In our English translations, you see the word leprosy throughout the chapter, but it includes a wide variety of skin diseases. The procedure was that a person that had something like this was brought to the priest for examination. He was isolated, he or she was isolated, then reinspected, and a washing of clothes took place. Chapter 14 were dealt with the rituals of the sacrifices after recovering from skin disease. Again, there was an examination by the priest after the person had recovered. Then there was a cleansing ritual followed by 7 days of isolation from the rest of the camp. And finally, the chapter dealt with the sacrifices of atonement and purification following 7 days of isolation took place on the 8th day. Now, a key verse that covers all this temporary defilement throughout chapters 12 through 15, we'll actually be approaching this verse later on in chapter 15. Chapter 15, verse 31 of Leviticus, where God says, "Thus you shall separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, lest they die in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is among them." God's presence was in the tabernacle. The holy, great creator God. Anybody in an unclean condition could not come into the tabernacle to worship. Or they could possibly die. It was that serious. And that's what we've been talking about in these chapters. Now, as a way of review, remember that only the ceremonially clean could worship at the tabernacle. And there were actually 3 ways of dealing with uncleanness. First of all, with the individual, they were quarantined, put apart, separate, and then they had to be washed. And that took care of the individual. But also, the third way to deal with uncleanness, which dealt with the sanctuary, was a purification offering, a sacrifice to purify the sanctuary. Chapters 12 through 15 deal with temporary uncleanness, and we'll continue on with that theme in chapter 15, although it is the least defiling of all the uncleanness. Chapter 15. This is purification following bodily secretions, the kind that would render a person ritually unclean. In other words, they cannot worship in the tabernacle. These are things that happen to us in our normal life, but they are the least defiling, and it involves no more than 1 week of isolation before entering back into the tabernacle. Verse number 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when a man has a discharge from his body, his discharge is unclean. And again, these are things that happen to us in our normal life. I'm reading in the New King James now. In the last part of verse 1, we see that it's a discharge from his body. If you're reading in the Old King James, the term is from his flesh. This is a figure of speech used in this section of Scripture to describe our private parts. And as the Nelson Study Bible points out, a discharge refers to any abnormal flow that comes from those parts. Verse number 3. And this shall be his uncleanness in regard to his discharge. Whether his body runs with his discharge or his body is stopped up by his discharge, it is his uncleanness. Now, scholars and the commentators are not very conclusive on what the discharge is that's talked about here, but many of them concur that it's possibly an inflammation of the urinary tract. But as Word Commentary points out, any abnormal discharge, no matter what the cause, makes the person unclean, and they can't come into the tabernacle and worship. Verse number 4. Every bed is unclean on which he who has the discharge lies, and everything on which he sits shall be unclean. Verse 5. And whoever touches his bed shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean, notice, until evening. So it's a very temporary uncleanness if you'd happen to touch somebody that has this uncleanness, or if it's or whatever they had sat on, etc. So anything that the source of the discharge comes into contact with becomes unclean until evening. Verse number 6. He who sits on anything on which he who has the discharge sat shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and again, be unclean until evening. Verse 7, and he who touches the body of him who has the discharge shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. So if you happen to touch somebody that has a certain discharge, You have to wash your clothes, bathe in water, and you're unclean temporarily until evening. Word Commentary. One who becomes unclean secondarily becomes clean again by washing his clothes, bathing in water, and waiting until evening. Verse number 8, and this is the way people throughout the ages have shown contempt to another person. If he who has the discharge spits on him who is clean, then he shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. Any saddle, this would be a carriage or a cart to ride in, on which he who has the discharge rides shall be unclean. Verse 10, whoever touches anything that was under him shall be unclean again until evening. He who carries any of those things shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. And spitting upon another person, as I mentioned, is a practice that throughout the ages has been an expression of insult or contempt to another person. Word Commentary adds, it's clear that the spit is viewed as carrying the properties of the unclean person from whom it came. And the saddle, if you were riding upon a saddle or a carriage, as it's better translated, is unclean as well. Now, we come to verse number 10, or 11, excuse me. This emphasizes the importance of hand washing, especially for somebody that has this condition. Verse number 11, and whomever the one who has the discharge touches and has not rinsed his hands in water, he shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. And of course, God was teaching this principle to the children of Israel, something that even people in our day and time need to learn to do more of. Word Commentary. Apparently, a person with a discharge may touch another person in the course of daily life without making that person unclean, as long as the one with the discharge has rinsed his hands. Verse number 12, this has to do with dishes, if somebody would touch that. The vessel of earth, verse 12, that he who has the discharge touches shall be broken, and every vessel of wood shall be rinsed in water. So dishes that a person had with a discharge touches had to be treated. A ceramic dish had to be broken, while a wooden vessel was rinsed in water. And this regulation sought to prevent a person's uncleanness from spreading to others by means of vessels used for eating. The next section that we come to, verses 13 through 15, discuss the means of purification. The procedure so that one could go back and worship again in the tabernacle. The procedure to make one ritually clean. Verse 13. And when he who has a discharge is cleansed of his discharge, then he shall count for himself 7 days for his cleansing. 7 days of quarantine isolation. Wash his clothes, bathe his body in running water. That's running water as opposed to stagnant water, like from a stream or a well. Then he shall be clean. So 7 days, which signifies completeness, goes by. Then verse 14, on the 8th day, he shall take for himself 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons. This would be for a sacrifice. Come before the Lord in the tabernacle area to the door of the tabernacle meeting. Give them to the priest. Then the priest shall offer them, the one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering. Now let me stop and point out something here. Here's that case where a better translation is purification offering rather than a sin offering. A person with a urinary tract infection, any kind of discharge, hasn't sinned. It's a part of something that happens to us. But the sanctuary does have to be purified, and it's done with the 2 turtle doves or young pigeons. This is actually a cheap offering. Or I shouldn't say a cheap, but a less expensive offering. Rather than bringing a bull or something that was very costly, this is a less expensive offering. And that shows that this is a least defiling type of uncleanness. Okay, Word Commentary points out, health and cleanness are coupled as the aim of these regulations on ritual purity. The one who has recovered must wait 7 days after his recovery, no doubt, to make sure that the recovery is genuine. On the 8th day, that person is to wash his clothing, bathe his body in running water. Afterwards, he is to present a sacrifice. And again, a less expensive of one. Verse 16. If a man has an emission of semen, then he shall wash all his body in water, be unclean until evening. And any garment, and any leather on which there's semen, he shall wash it with water and be unclean until evening. Also, verse 18, when a woman lies with a man and there's an emission of semen, he shall bathe in water and be unclean until evening. Here's a good comment from Word Commentary. Uncleanness from normal sexual activities is of the mildest type. Both parties remain unclean only until evening. Purification is accomplished by washing in water, and no sacrifice is required. A couple's becoming unclean in this way is not a serious issue. The major limitation is that it prevents them from entering the area of the sanctuary. And so, in other words, if couple has sexual relations, they have to wait until evening and go through this process of washing in water before they come into the sanctuary area. Now, you might think that this is trivial, but God makes a point with this because the pagans did a lot of weird stuff in the worship of their religion. And sex had to do a lot with it. You know, you've heard of temple prostitution and that kind of thing. And they had orgies in their religious services and such. So this prevented that kind of thing from happening in God's worship area. Verse number 19. This deals with a discharge of blood. And remember, blood is very significant in Leviticus. God says that the life of the flesh is in the blood. And it's that the blood that makes atonement for the soul. We'll get into that in chapter 17. Verse number 19. If a woman has a discharge, and the discharge from her body is blood, she shall be set apart 7 days, and whoever touches her shall be unclean until evening. Everything that she lies on during her impurity shall be unclean. Also everything that she sits on shall be unclean. Good comment from Word. This standard must mean that a woman would have her own bed and chair for this time of the month. These laws do not discriminate unduly against women. Both men and women are made unclean by discharges from their genitals. It is important to note that neither a woman nor a man has to make a sacrifice in order to become clean, for their flows are natural. But again, the loss of blood is very critical. And in the ancient times, as I pointed out before, sometimes they couldn't deal with the loss of blood, and it actually led to death. So it is very critical. Verse 21. And whoever touches her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe in water, be unclean until evening. And whoever touches anything that she sat on shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. If anything is on her bed, or anything on which she sits, when he touches it, he shall be unclean until evening. Verse 24. And if a man lies with her at all, so that her impurity is on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. Again, Word commentary. If a man lies with a woman during her period, he becomes unclean for 7 days. There's no grave stigma attached to his deed, or in any sense that he has sinned. For he does not have to offer up an offering a part of his becoming clean. Verse 25, this has to do with an abnormal discharge of blood, something that's more serious and that can't be controlled. Verse 25, if a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, other than at the time of her customary impurity, or if it runs beyond her usual time of impurity, all the days of her unclean discharge shall be as the days of her customary impurity. She shall be unclean. In other words, until the discharge of blood ends. Verse 26. Every bed on which she lies all the days of her discharge shall be to her as the bed of her impurity. Whatever she sits on shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her impurity. Verse 27. Whoever touches those things shall be unclean. He shall wash his clothes, bathe in water, and be unclean until evening. Nelson Study Bible. If a woman has had a flow of blood at any other time than her normal monthly period, or if it lasted longer than usual, her uncleanness continued the whole time and passed to all she touched. Such was the case with the woman who touched Jesus secretly. And I've got the scripture, Luke chapter 8, verse 43 through 48. That was the case where this woman had this abnormal discharge of blood that was not curable and just continued on. She touched Christ and she was healed immediately. And that's what this was referring to in Luke chapter 8. Verse 28. But if she is cleansed of her discharge, in other words, it ends, it stops, then she shall count for herself 7 days, wait for 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the 8th day, she shall take for herself 2 turtle doves, 2 young pigeons. This is a sacrifice, a less expensive one. Bring them to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Verse 30, then the priest shall offer the one, better as purification offering, and the other as a burnt offering. And the priest shall make atonement for her before the Lord for the discharge of her uncleanness. Another comment from the Nelson Study Bible. At the end of her abnormal discharge, A woman's obligation was the same as the man's. This is another indication of her standing before God, of the right and duty to offer sacrifice on her behalf in the tabernacle. She was to bring the smallest allowable sacrifice for the atonement of sins she may have committed during the period of her uncleanness when she was barred from the tabernacle. And now we come to this key verse as we wind down in chapter 15, verse 31. Thus you shall separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, lest they die in their uncleanness when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. And we've gone through all these chapters now, 12, 13, 14, and 15, dealing with all kinds of different diseases that would make somebody not able to come and worship in the tabernacle until they're isolated, cleansed, and in some cases a sacrifice made. This phrase, separate the children from their uncleanness, comment from the Nelson Study Bible. Health and hygiene were important byproducts, but the focus of these regulations concerning uncleanness was keeping God's tabernacle undefiled so that Israel would have a place to come for the atonement of sin and the privilege of meeting with God. And finally, the last two verses, verse 32, this is the law for one who has a discharge and for him who emits semen and is unclean thereby, and verse 33, who is indisposed because of her customary impurity, and for the one who has a discharge, either man or woman, and for him who lies with her who is unclean. And we see this important phrase, verse 31, lest they die. In a comment from Bible Knowledge Commentary, these verses state the purpose of this law, so that they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place which is among them. And then it's relisted here in verse 32 and 33, the regulations. This ends the section on dealing with temporary uncleanness, chapters 12 through 15. That brings us now to chapter 16, very important chapter in the book of Leviticus. As a way of introduction, here's a layout of the tabernacle that you've seen many times before. We'll come back to this in a moment. So far, as we've been going through the book of Leviticus, we've been talking about approaching God because His presence is at the tabernacle, His divine presence. God had provided Israel for means of atonement of sins by sacrifices. We talked about that in the first few chapters, 1-7. Also, God provided means of removing defilement so that they could worship at the tabernacle, chapters 12 through 15. However, not all wrongdoings are discovered. People have human nature. They hide things. Nor is everyone diligent to confess when they've sinned, etc. So God gave instructions in chapter 16 so that once a year the tabernacle was purified to ensure God's presence would be with them. And that is chapter 16, the Day of Atonement. But it goes beyond that, a once a year purification of the tabernacle, because this day, the Day of Atonement, has symbolisms involving God's plan of salvation for mankind. And it is a holy day. Okay, now you see the diagram here of the tabernacle. And of course, this is what's called the holy place, where the incense altar, the table of showbread, and the lampstand were. The veil separated the holy place from the holy of holies, or most holy place, where the Ark of the Covenant was. And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention before we go into the chapter is that in our King James versions, it's talked as the holy place, where it's really referring to the most holy place, where the Ark of the Covenant is. So in our King James versions, it's called the holy place, and you can tell by the context whether it's talking about the most holy place or not. Okay? Another thing that I want to bring to your attention to help understand chapter 16 better is that chapter 16 is actually divided into sections. For so many years, you know, reading through chapter 16, you start at the beginning and go through the end, like you're reading everything that runs together, but it's actually divided into sections. Verse 1 through 2 talks about the chronology of when this took place and a warning to Aaron and his sons. Verses 3 through 5, that section, things that are prepared in advance for the Day of Atonement ceremonies. They had to prepare things in advance. Verses 6 through 10 is an outline of the day's events. What's going to be happening? A summary, in other words. Verses 11 through 28 are the main ceremony that takes place on the Day of Atonement. And finally, at the end of the chapter, verses 29 through 34 is the formal institution of the Day of Atonement. So when you understand that these sections exist and what it's talking about, it helps you to understand the chapter. So let's go ahead and get into chapter 16. This is also covered, the Day of Atonement, in the Leviticus chapter 23, which lists all of God's holy days, and it's specifically verses 26 through 32. Also, you can find about the Day of Atonement sacrifices in Numbers 29, verses 7 through 11. There's actually some sacrifices that are extra sacrifices to be done on that Day of Atonement that are not discussed in chapter 16. For instance, drink offerings, grain offerings, they are to be done on the Day of Atonement as well, but they're not discussed in chapter 16. So those are some parallel scriptures. It is a special day, a holy day, and we're going to see that there are certain unique features about the Day of Atonement that have not been discussed previously in the book of Leviticus involving the sacrifices, etc. Okay, let's get into that first section, the introduction, which is a chronology of when this took place and a warning as well. Verse number 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, and here's when it took place, after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they offered profane fire before the Lord and died. Now remember going back to chapter 10 that two of Aaron's sons died, and these instructions in chapter 16 appear to have been imparted right after those events took place when Nadab and Abihu died. Remember, they offered profane fire. They didn't do things correctly, and they were killed as a result. This seems to tell us that this happened right afterwards, and to give them a warning. We see the phrase here also, when they offered profane fire and died. And again, this is talking about Nadab and Abihu. So this was also a warning to the high priest not to do what they had done. Chapter 16 gives the proper instructions, the proper occasion, preparation and ritual for the high priest to approach God and not die. The correct procedure, and not what Nadab and Abihu had done. Verse number 2. Here's the warning now. Verse 1 gives us the chronology that it happened after their death. Now here's the warning in verse number 2. And the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come just at any time into, and I've added, most holy place, here's described, inside the veil, before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die. For I will appear in the cloud above the mercy seat. Okay, now in your King James versions, you'll notice that it just says holy place. But obviously it's talking about the most holy place, because it's talking about where the Ark of the Covenant is, where God would appear in the cloud above the mercy seat. So I've inserted most holy place here in verse number 2. And God warns Aaron not to come at just any time into the most holy place. And the context indicates that this is to be only one day of the year, the Day of Atonement, where the high priest can come in to the Holy of Holies behind the veil, where the Ark of the Covenant was. Now we come to the next section in chapter 16, verses 3 through 5. And these are things that are to be prepared in advance for the Day of Atonement ceremonies. And there's three of them to be prepared. Verse 3, verse 4, and verse 5. Here's the first thing to be prepared in verse number 3. And this is not a good translation in our King James versions. Thus Aaron shall come into the holy place with the blood of a young bull as a sin offering and of a ram as a burnt offering. All right, now our King James translators added something here to try to make it clear where it was going. Notice it's in italics, with the blood of a young bull. So, talking about going into the most holy place. But if you took out that which was added, it would read, thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bull as a sin offering and a ram as a burnt offering. Now that, you wouldn't take a bull and a ram into the tabernacle area at all. So that, like I said, it's not a good translation. A better translation is the New International Version. And it reads like this. This is how Aaron is to enter the sanctuary area. In other words, the tabernacle courtyard. With a young bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. Okay? Now this was a process. We've talked about how much work there was involved with all of this, you know, with the sacrifices, etc. A ram for a burnt offering, that had to be a ram without blemish. A ram without blemish. So it had to be selected from the animals, brought into the courtyard area. So there's a process involved. The young bull for a sin offering is going to be discussed in verse 6 and verse 11. But the ram for a burnt offering will not be discussed until verse 24 later on in the chapter. But the designated animals for sacrifice were to be brought into the tabernacle courtyard, the sanctuary area. For the high priest and his family, a young bull for a sin offering, which will be discussed in verses 6 and 11, and a ram for a burnt offering for himself. Verse 3, as we just read, and later on in the chapter, the actual sacrifice will take place in verse 24. Now, just as a way of review, going back to earlier in Leviticus, remember that a sin offering, also sometimes better translated purification offering, is where the place of worship was purified by blood. The purification offering, Leviticus chapter 4, remember, he took a bowl of blood after the animal was killed, went into the holy place in front of the veil, sprinkled it 7 times in front of the veil, and then around the altar of incense. That's what's going to be done here, but not in the holy place, but inside the most holy place, the blood sprinkling. And also a burnt offering was an acceptance offering to be accepted by God. It was completely consumed on the fire, emphasizing complete dedication to God. So that's these two offerings are what's going to be taking place for the priest. Now the second thing that's prepared in advance, the second detail done in advance of the ceremony, has to do with the clothing that he would wear during the ceremony. Verse number 4. He shall put on the holy linen tunic and the linen trousers on his body. That's what I've described as the working clothes. Not the fancy dress of the ceremony where it's all, you know, the jewels, etc. This is the white tunic because he's going to be working with blood. Continuing on, he shall be girded with a linen sash, and with the linen turban he shall be attired. These are holy garments. Therefore he shall wash his body in water and put them on. So this is the second thing to be done in advance before the actual ceremony takes place. So Aaron, the high priest, instead of wearing the beautiful garments of his consecration ceremony, he's to wear simple duty working clothes. Which, as the Jewish Study Bible points out, when soiled by the sprinkling of blood, are easily laundered. One more comment from the Nelson Study Bible about this dress. The holy garments are not the elaborate robe and accessories described in Exodus 28. But the simple linen garments the priest wore when on duty at the altar. On this day, the high priest went in simplicity and humility. He offered atonement for himself first, then for his family, and finally, all Israel. So rather than the pomp and the fancy dress, simple working clothes, humility, simplicity. Finally, in preparation for the day's ceremonies, the third detail to be prepared in advance, verse number 5, and he's already got the bull and ram for himself. He's got the linen clothes prepared. Now, verse 5, he shall take from the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of the goats as a sin offering and 1 ram as a burnt offering. Now, we talk about the goats on the Day of Atonement when we do sermons, and we'll talk about them here in the Bible study. Word commentary adds to this. The congregation, represented by the tribal leaders, is to present 2 goats for a purification offering and a ram for the whole burnt offering. It's interesting to note that the statement that both goats are for the sin purification offering when only one is offered on the altar. There's symbolisms in these goats, as you know, we'll talk about that. One is actually sacrificed, where one is led into the wilderness bearing sins. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Now we've had the 3 details prepared in advance. Now we come to the next section in chapter 16, the outline of the major features of the ceremony. This is a summary of the day's events summarized in 4 steps. Here's the first step, where the ceremony begins as Aaron sacrifices a bull as a sin purification offering for the priests. Atonement for them first, before they seek forgiveness for the congregation. So what was mentioned in verse number 3 now is discussed in verse 6. And again, this is an outline of what's going to happen. Verse 6, Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. So this is the first step that's going to be done in this, what's going to take place. Notice our English word atonement here. This comes from the Hebrew kafar, which means to cover. And it's the only word for atonement in the Old Testament. The first time that this word kafar was used goes back to Genesis chapter 6, verse 14, where Noah was building the ark. And God told him, make yourself an ark of gopher wood, make rooms in the ark, and cover it inside and outside with pitch. This is the first time that word kafar was used in the Old Testament. And what Moses did is he covered the outside of the ark with pitch, which was an asphalt ingredient, to keep out the floodwaters, which were the judgment waters God sent upon the earth. Help keep those waters out. And as the Companion Bible points out, it's only atonement, the covering, that keep judgment waters away from us. Christ's sacrifice, this is one of the great themes of the Day of Atonement. Through Christ's sacrifice, our sins are covered. And again, cover it inside and outside with pitch. And cover is the word, the English translation from the Hebrew word. Now going on to the second step in this outline, and this is unique to sacrifices in Leviticus. Think about all what we've discussed in covering the sacrifices. You know, and there's been a lot of details, a whole lot of details that God gave. But nothing like this was ever given, only on the Day of Atonement. Lots are cast, probably from the Urim and Thummim, to decide which goat is to be sacrificed for the people and which goat would be sent into the wilderness. Verse number 7. He shall take the two goats, present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. This has never been talked about in any of the other sacrifices in Leviticus. In verse number 8, we see one goat was for the Lord. It was to be offered as a sacrifice. Symbolically, this goat represents Jesus Christ, who would pay the penalty for our sins. The third step then, after the lots have been cast, in this summary, is the goat was determined from the lots for the sin offering, and it was sacrificed. And as I mentioned, this goat represents Christ to pay the penalty for our sins. Verse number 9, as we continue this outline, Aaron shall bring the goat on which the Lord's lot fell and offer it as a sin offering. We see this word fell here, and that's talking about from the bag containing the Urim and Thummim, and the way that they would select which goat would be sacrificed. In the last part of verse number 9, in the Old King James, it reads, offer him for a sin offering. Here's a companion scripture for you. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21. For he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. That's the third step that's talked about in this outline. The goat that's to be offered for a sin offering. Finally, fourth step in this outline. The other goat, the scapegoat, is brought before the Lord and sent into the wilderness alive. This goat represents Satan bearing the responsibility of mankind's sins. Verse number 10. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it, and let it go as the scapegoat into the wilderness. And the last word in verse number 10, the wilderness, as the companion Bible points out, or desert, symbol of abode of all evil things. So these verses, verses 6 through 10, summarize the detailed proceedings of the next section of scriptures, verses 11 through 28. Now we come to the actual main ceremony to be done on the Day of Atonement, verses 11 through 28. What takes place first in the main ceremony is the blood sprinkling ritual of the high priest. That's covered in verses 11 through 14. So a sin, or better translated, purification offering, is made for Aaron and the priests, similar to the one described in chapter 4, except for the difference of where the blood is sprinkled. Not sprinkled in front of the veil, the curtain, but actually taken inside the most holy place. So we come to the first part of the main ceremony now in verse number 11, which reflects back to verse number 6 in the summary section. Aaron shall bring the bull of the sin offering. So he's got the bull has been selected, brought to the altar of sacrifice in the courtyard, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and his house. Remember, we talked about the fact that in this particular sin offering, the animal would be brought, a person would put their hands on top of the animal's head, symbolizing that this animal represents me before the sacrifice. Then the last part of verse number 11, and shall kill the bull as the sin offering, which is for himself. So verse number 11 doesn't tell us all that's happening, but there was quite a bit in this particular procedure. It just summarizes quickly. So he's to kill the bull, and that would be in the courtyard at the altar of burnt offerings. And also part of this procedure was when that blood started to run out of the animal, he would take a bowl and gather up some of that blood from the animal that was killed. That's going to be taken inside the tabernacle. Bible Knowledge Commentary, the purpose of the high priest's sin offering was to make atonement for himself and his household. That's the very first part of the Day of Atonement ceremony. But now, before he does the blood sprinkling, he has to perform another required step inside the veil of the most holy place. So, let me stop for a second. He's already gathered up the blood from the animal. But he doesn't take the blood in yet. He has to do something first before he takes the blood into the most holy place. And that's covered in verses 12 and 13. And we're actually going to see that altogether, the high priest is going to enter the most holy place three times. Three times behind the veil. The first time would be in verses 12 and 13. And this is again before he takes the blood in. Verse number 12. Then he shall take a censer full of burning coals. Notice I've got underlined from the altar before the Lord. This is where Nadab and Abihu messed up because they didn't take the fire from there. With his hands full of sweet incense, beaten fine, and bring it inside the veil. So he's got to do this before he takes the blood behind the veil. Okay, here's the altar of burnt offerings in the courtyard. And the phrase is, from the altar, fire from the altar. As the Bible Knowledge Commentary points out, because this is the correct procedure. The first time, with a censer full of burning coals, from the altar of burnt offering, on which the coals he was to burn incense, especially prepared for use in the tabernacle. Okay, here's a picture of the high priest. Notice he has the censer hanging down from his hands here. He takes hot burning coals from the altar here, puts them at the bottom of the censer here. Then he takes a special formula of incense, puts it on top of the burning coals, and it makes a smoke. So he's got the hot burning coals from the fire, the bottom of the censer. He takes it inside the most holy place where the Ark of the Covenant is. And he puts the incense on top of the hot burning coals. And this created a smoke screen to prevent gazing at God's glory. Anybody looking at God's glory would die instantly. So this actually made a smoke screen to prevent his death, the high priest's death. And this is the correct procedure that is to be done, that God's pointing out. Verses 12, it continues on in verse 13. And he shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, so he puts the incense on top of the burning coals, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the testimony, lest he die. So there's the inside the veil again, where the Ark of the Covenant is. Here he is with the censer. So he puts the incense on the hot burning coals and takes it inside. Here's today's English version of verse 13. It reads like this. There in the Lord's presence, he shall put the incense on the fire. And the smoke of the incense will hide the lid of the covenant box, so that he will not see it and die. So this is what he had to do first before he takes the blood in there. So now the high priest exits after doing this, goes back and gets the blood from the bull in the dish. He exits the most holy place. And this brings us to the next verse, verse 14. And this will actually be the second time behind the veil now. Verse 14. He shall take some of the blood of the bull, sprinkle it with his finger on the mercy seat on the east side, and before the mercy seat he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger seven times, which we've seen over and over again, seven times in Leviticus, completeness it represents. Now notice it says on the east side of the mercy seat. Sometimes the question is why on the east side? Well, God is viewed as enthroned over the cherubim facing eastward. And that's why. So, he's to sprinkle seven times on the mercy seat here. The second time behind the veil, he sprinkles some of the blood on the front of the mercy seat on the east side. And then seven times before the mercy seat, either on the front of it or against the mercy seat. So he's done this now, the sprinkling of the blood to purify the sanctuary in case there's any other sins that Israel's been hiding along the way, etc. Now he leaves the most holy place again to perform the next sacrifice, the third time behind the veil. Verse 15, then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering, and notice who this is for, which is for the people. Bring its blood inside the veil, do with that blood as he did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle it on the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. So the other time previously when he did the bull's blood, that was for himself, the high priest, and his family. Now he does the blood of the goat, which he had in a dish or a bowl, does this sprinkling seven times for the people. So he killed the Lord's goat for the sin offering for the people, which again, that's working, you know, a process, draining the blood, gathering it up, went into the midst of the holy place and manipulated the blood as he did before. Verse 16 just gives us the reasons why this blood purification takes place, a twofold reason. Verse 16, so he shall make atonement for the most holy place. And why? Why does he have to do this? Number one, because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel. And number two, because of their transgressions for all their sins. So whatever defilement that was left over, whatever sins had been hidden, this purifies the most holy place. I actually think the last part of verse 16 should be its own verse, but I didn't make this translation. But that's what I would do. The last part of verse 16. And, notice the word and, so shall he do for the tabernacle of meeting, which remains among them in the midst of their uncleanness. So just as he had sprinkled blood in the most holy place, now he does the same in the rest of the tabernacle, the holy place, where the altar of incense, the table of showbread, and the lampstand is. Verse 17, this is such a serious ceremony. Notice it says, there shall be no man in the tabernacle of meeting when he goes in to make atonement in the most holy place, until he comes out, that he may make atonement for himself, for his household, and for the assembly of all Israel. So nobody absolutely could be in the tabernacle when he was doing these things, the blood ceremony. In the middle of the verse, we see the phrase, and so shall he do for the tabernacle of meeting. As I pointed out, I'd have that as a separate verse. Bible Knowledge Commentary. The same ritual was to be enacted in the tent of meeting, perhaps through sprinkling of blood seven times before the altar of incense, then by smearing blood on the horns of the altar. And the combined blood sprinkling ritual in both parts of the tabernacle, verses 15 and 16, provided cleansing for the people and the place of worship. Again, to take care of anything else that needs to be covered. Now the next part of the main ceremony, verses 18 through 19, is the cleansing of the altar of burnt offering in the courtyard. This is where the animals are barbecued, as we would say. And it's the altar in the courtyard. Verse number 18, and he shall go out. And then let me point out, this is a unique part as well. He shall go out to the altar that is before the Lord, make atonement for it, shall take some of the blood of the bull for the priest, and some of the blood of the goat, which is for the people, and put it on the horns of the altar all around. Verse 19, then he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger seven times, cleanse it, consecrate it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel. So again, blood sprinkling ceremony, covering all the sins for the people, the priests, etc., for the altar of sacrifice. We see this phrase in verse 18, he shall go out to the altar. Sometimes there's a controversy amongst commentators on which altar this is talking about, but it's pretty clear that it's the altar in the courtyard. Jewish Study Bible. It's preferable to explain he shall go out as meaning he shall exit the tent of meeting. The altar is the sacrificial altar that stood in the courtyard. The purgation of the incense altar having been accomplished already. That had already been done back in verse 16. And in verse 18 we see the blood of the bull and the goat is used to purify this altar. And as a New International Commentary points out, using the blood of both animals symbolized the fact that the altar had to be cleansed from the defilements of priests and people. Now we come to verse number 20, an absolutely unique phase of the Day of Atonement ceremony. Something that's not been done in any of the sacrifices thus far in Leviticus. And this ties in with God's plan of salvation. We talk about this on the Day of Atonement. Verse number 20. And when he has made an end of atoning for the most holy place, you know, the blood sprinkling there, the tabernacle of meeting, and the altar, the blood sprinkling there, he shall bring the live goat. So the blood sprinkling's been done, now the live goat is presented. Here's a unique part as well, verse 21. Something that's not been done previously in Leviticus. And Aaron shall lay both his hands on the head of the live goat, confess over it all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions concerning all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat, send it away into the wilderness by the hand of a suitable man. The goat shall bear on itself all the iniquities to an uninhabited land, and he shall release the goat in the wilderness. Remember Leviticus chapter 4, the sin offering? If a person, an Israelite, came in and sinned, he brought the animal in, confessed his sin, put his hands over the head and said, "This goat represents me. I have sinned." And then it's sacrificed. Here, the hands are put on the live goat. All the sins of Israel are put on this goat. Every single one of them sent out into the wilderness. So the high priest places his hands on the goat's head, the live goat that was selected by the lot, confesses the nation's sins, symbolically transferring the sins to the goat, who is then led into the wilderness by a man made ready for the job. An individual had to be selected to do this as well. Here's a comment from our Holy Day booklet, God's Holy Day Plan. The symbolism of the live goat parallels the fate of Satan and his demons, whom God will remove before Christ's millennial rule is established. We know this part has to take place. Satan has to be removed in order for us to have 1,000 years of peace, happiness, and tranquility. And this live goat represents Satan being put away. Now we come to, finally, the burnt offering of the ram. In a burnt offering, it was an offering to be accepted by God. This was what was talked about in it, prepared in advance in verses 3 through 5. The priest's ram and the people's ram. They had been prepared, but they hadn't been offered yet. Now they're going to be. Verse 23. Then Aaron shall come into the tabernacle of meeting, shall take off the linen garments, which he had put on when he went into the most holy place, and shall leave them there. Takes off the working clothes. Verse 24, he shall wash his body with water in a holy place, in other words, in the tabernacle area, courtyard, put on his garments, the beautiful garments of the consecration ceremony, and he shall come out and offer his burnt offering. The Old King James says, go forth, which is a better translation, I think. Go forth, offer his burnt offering, which had been prepared back in verse 3, and the burnt offering of the people, which had been prepared in advance, verse 5, and make atonement for himself and for the people. And along with that, verse 25, the fat of the sin offering he shall burn on the altar. So this is the burnt offering for the priest and the people, an acceptance offering that they be accepted by God. Now, the guy that had released the goat into the wilderness, he has to be dealt with because he had carried this goat out, which had all these sins symbolically laid on its head. Verse 26. Oh, excuse me, I got a couple more comments to talk about here back previously here. Telan Delich, Aaron was to go into the tabernacle and there take off his white clothes, lay them down, because they were to only be worn in the expiatory ritual of this day, then bathe his body in the court. In Tyndale commentary, Aaron had to take off his linen attire, wash his entire body in a specially reserved area of the tabernacle court. He was then required to wear his normal priestly vestments while he offered burnt sacrifices for himself and the people. So he wore the fancy clothes when he did this burnt offering. Now we come to the fellow who released the goat. Verse 26. Let me take a drink of water here real quick. Verse number 26. And he who released the goat as a scapegoat, he had to do something as well, shall wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and afterward he may come into the camp. So the fellow that took the goat in the wilderness, he can't come back until he's washed himself and washed his clothes. Now, the disposal of the rest of the sin offering is discussed in verse 27. The bull for the sin offering and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was brought in to make atonement in the holy place, shall be carried outside the camp, and they shall burn the fire in their skins, their flesh, and their offal. Again, that's on that particular sin offering. The rest of the animal had to be burned outside the camp. Verse 28. Then he who burns them shall wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and afterward he may come into the camp. So all these things that we've talked about previously in the sacrifices in Leviticus come into play here, but concerning the individuals who actually do these things. The one that burned the bodies outside the camp, he had to wash his clothes, bathe himself in water before he could come into the camp. Telan Delich, the man who took the goat into the desert, and those who burned the two sin offerings outside the camp had to also wash their clothes, bathe their bodies before they returned to the camp, because they had been defiled by the animals laden with sin. Verse 28 concludes the main ceremony done on the Day of Atonement. However, now we come to the last section in the chapter, the formal institution of the Day of Atonement. Verse 28 ends the main ceremony. Now we come to the last section, verses 29 through 34. Notice this, verse number 29. And this is unique. This makes this day unique. Verse 29. This shall be a statute forever for you. It even gets its own date on God's calendar. Notice. In the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, here's something that's unique. You shall afflict your souls and do no work at all, whether a native of your own country or a stranger who dwells among you. In all the details and everything that we've had with the sacrifices, nothing has been done like this previously, where there's a specific day set aside, which in Leviticus chapter 23, God calls my feasts, and a specific calendar day set aside to do these particular ceremony. Afflict your souls and no work as well. Makes this a unique day on God's calendar. Verse number 30. For on that day, the priest shall make atonement for you to cleanse you, that you may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. So, all the other sacrifices, you know, if somebody sinned any day of the year, you could bring in a sin offering. You could bring in a peace offering. You could grain offerings throughout the year. But on this special day, these things had to be done. Afflict your souls, no work at all. It's a special day, a holy day. Word commentary. At this point, decrees are given to place this solemn day in Israel's calendar. The Day of Atonement is to be observed on the 10th day of the 7th month. The number 7, made up of sacred numbers 3 plus 4, is the number of completeness in ancient Israel. And also on this day, they were to afflict their souls, which is repeated again in verse 31. We'll get to that. And in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 27, the chapter that outlines all of God's holy days, it shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls. Special day, and it's a statute forever. Verse 31, it's a Sabbath of a solemn rest for you. You shall afflict your souls. It is a statute forever. We see this phrase, a Sabbath of solemn rest. If you're reading in the Old King James, it's translated a Sabbath of rest. It comes from the Hebrew word, a phrase, Sabbath of sabbatizing, which equals a most holy Sabbath. And some of the commentators even say the Sabbath of all Sabbaths. It's such a special day. And, of course, one is to afflict himself or herself, which Isaiah chapter 58, verse 3 points out, it means to fast. Now, as we close chapter 16, we have a summary of the day and the significance of the day summarized. Verse 32, and the priest who is anointed and consecrated to minister as priest in his father's place shall make atonement. Put on the linen clothes, the holy garments. Then he shall make atonement for the holy sanctuary, and he shall make atonement for the tabernacle of meeting and for the altar. And he shall make atonement for the priests and for the assembly, the people of the assembly. All the things that have been done now are summarized. And finally, verse 34. This shall be an everlasting statute for you to make atonement for the children of Israel for all their sins, once a year. And he did as the Lord commanded Moses. One comment here from expositors. Notice that the conclusion of the whole chapter does not mention the cleansing of the tabernacle furniture, but specifies that atonement was made once a year for all the sins of the Israelites. It completes chapter 16, but I will leave you with some lessons like we usually do. First of all, again from our booklet, God's Holy Day Plan, the symbolism of the live goat parallels the fate of Satan and his demons, whom God will remove before Jesus Christ's millennial rule is established. Here's another lesson. The blood of the slain goat was taken into the most holy place. And the mercy seat, symbolic of the throne of God. Companion scripture, Hebrews 9:11-12. But Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this physical creation, not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. Not with blood of goats and calves, but his own blood shed for all of us. And finally, because of Christ's sacrifice, we have a direct access to the true mercy seat, the very throne of God. And the Day of Atonement pictures reconciliation we have with God, made possible by Christ's sacrifice. That brings us to the conclusion of Leviticus chapter 16. Unless anybody has any questions or comments, I hope in the way that I've done this and pointing out that there's certain sections involved in here, it helps your understanding of chapter 16 and brought out other things as well. Any questions or comments? No? Okay. Very fine, then. We'll have